This is the Drive and Dish Podcast, talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
It seems like the Heat this year, with the way that they're built, they have a lot to prove, and I think that they could potentially be the 2 seed in the East.
Kevin Rayfuse.
It's October 28th. The Spurs play the Thunder. So you got Lamar Saldridge making his debut with San Antonio. You've got Kevin Durant, first game back, coming off foot surgery. You know, we know these teams have battled before, twice in the Western Conference Finals.
Justin Cousins.
You got to get somebody around Davis. Maybe some guards that can get on the ball, so not Lance Stevens.
Let's go.
So, guys, I got to be honest, I'm a tad disappointed. As we know, if our listeners listened to last episode with Cal and with Griffin, shout out to both those gentlemen, that I was not on that episode. I was actually out of town, and I came back expecting a whole ridiculous tale of where I actually wasn't, and instead got to hear about my relationship status.
It's not that we wanted to rub it in.
Oh, I don't take offense to it. Like, it's not like you made me, guys. It's not like you made me sound desperate. And I think, well, both of you know, and I guess our listeners are about to find out that I am coming off a relationship from about 2 months ago. So, you know, I got an ex ball, I guess. But, you know, sometimes things don't work out. But seriously, like, I was all ready to explain that I was in Savannah in Athens, Georgia, originally for Georgia, South Carolina, and just. Instead, it was 6 things about being single, which, by the way, every single one of those is absolutely correct.
I don't know about all of them. I think we disagreed with like 2 of them, Tim, if I remember.
The sleep, money, and working out is definitely correct on all 3 accounts.
And then one was you're more independent.
Well, that one's just like, I actually...
But that has nothing to do with dating. You can date somebody and not live with them.
Right.
But my whole thing is like, if you're not with somebody, of course you're going to be more independent than somebody that's with
somebody.
Right,
it's like, who are you going to depend on?
What the hell are you saying? When that's when we got into the whole orange thing.
Orange.
Yeah, we're not getting into that again.
Oh, yeah, it's just every time it's funny because every time really last night, I don't know what it was, but when I was listening last night... Man, that whole intro, I was just like, oh, I want to say this, and I want to say this, and I want to say this. I was going to turn it off after 10 minutes, but it's cool, though. But anyway, so Justin has been sitting here, and he's had a story all loaded up for this intro, ready to tell. He's super excited about it, and he wouldn't even tell Tim and I what it was because he's so excited to tell us. So,
yes.
Justin, without further ado.
So I wanted to tell you about this product that has now come out and is trending. And I'm surprised that Kevin doesn't own one of these
because
he is a big advocate for these things.
Vibrators?
You guys are... No, but you know...
I was waiting on something like that.
But you know the selfie stick. Everybody loves the selfie
yes,
stick.
Yes, I want a really long one for a promo pic for us. I want to get a really long one so we're looking
like
up at it.
Like a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, but we need to be standing over a grassy field.
Well, forget...
Wait, what? What's a grassy field have to do with it?
I had the image of a new promo pick for us because it seems
does
like we all kind
have
of
grassy fields. Like, I feel like we don't really have grassy fields. It's either farmland or swamp.
Well, yeah, sure. Go by the beach. There's grass by one of those.
It's not grass. Florida doesn't have grass.
Well, it's
crabgrass is not
in,
grass.
Well, either way, aesthetically it looks the same.
Okay, fine. But forget the selfie stick for a second because the newest selfie trend thing is the selfie spoon.
So I'm going to eat. So say I'm eating yogurt.
Yes.
I get my spoonful of yogurt. And so I put it in my mouth and it takes the picture.
Yes.
Why would anyone other than a dentist ever use this?
Well, it's not going to take a picture in your mouth. It takes a picture of you eating the food. It's like above you. It's the same thing as a selfie stick, but at the end there's a spoon.
Oh.
So it takes a picture of you eating food?
Yes. Like, see, look, here, see, picture.
Who invented this?
Why would anyone want something like
that? Why wouldn't you want that is my question. And I'm surprised Kevin doesn't have this already.
You guys just need help, man. What are we doing anymore? What are we doing as a society? Why, I don't want to see any...
We're apparently taking selfies of ourselves eating cereal.
Why? Who cares?
No one looks good eating.
This girl doesn't look that bad.
Yeah, that's a promo pic. Unless it's a girl eating ice cream. For the vast majority of the time, there's no one that looks good eating anything.
Tim, you love when people eat bananas in front of you.
And look me straight in the eye.
Absolutely.
Only way to do it.
Only way to do it. But anyways, this is the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
7-Eleven is now delivering a date night pack with ice cream, chocolate gum, contraceptives, because nothing says date night like food from 7-Eleven.
And Justin is definitely a hilarious follow on Twitter. Make sure you do that. Justin C. on the air. He drops original jokes, quote unquote, all of the time.
Quote unquote, quote, original. Quote unquote. They're not always the most original. But they kind of.
Anyway, speaking of dropping original material, we got an iTunes review this week.
Mm.
This one's from Canada.
A?
It's a... well, there go all our Canadian listeners. The name of this review is Great Podcast. It's a 5-star review by Rockets90. And Rockets90 says, it's a great podcast. I listen to all basketball podcasts, and this is one of the best out there. You guys are the Stephen Curry of podcasts.
Ooh.
How can you listen to all basketball podcasts? There are so many.
Well, you listen to like 32, you said earlier.
Well, not all basketball.
Ooh, that's a lot.
But,
of
I mean, there are a lot of crap basketball podcasts. Because I look for new ones on the
regular. He's not saying we're crap back.
No, I know, but how do you listen to every single one? That seems like he's embellishing a little
bit. Ball is life.
Yeah, ball is life, man.
But there's a lot of basketball podcasts.
Do you think we're the Steph Curry of basketball
podcasts? No, I think we're more like the...
Paul Gasol?
No,
because that's like a veteran type.
You love Paul Gasol. You love Paul.
It's just the first thing that came to my mind because, you know, Spain won. So it was interesting.
Yeah, he cooked in that final, but anyway.
No, we're more like the Brandon Knight.
Oh,
Brandon
Knight. I don't
like
that comparison
at
all.
A mediocre point guard who gets injured all the time?
Come on.
Hey, he was a borderline all-star last year just because he left the Bucks.
I feel like
Bucks.
We would make an all-star
game. We were saying how good he was until he left the Bucks, and then all of a sudden we're like, you know, he's all right.
I know.
He goes to my team, and all of a sudden he's mediocre. When he was with the Bucks,
he's not great, though.
No,
he's not mediocre. I worry that he may have hit his peak last year, but I think he can still be good.
The kid's like 23.
I understand that.
He hit his peak last year.
I don't know that he can be better than he was playing for the Bucks last year. I don't think Brandon Knight is quite that good. I think he's good. I don't think he's that good.
Well, that's exactly how I feel about our podcast.
Oh, dude, come on, man. I think you're selling us short a little bit this time. You usually say the listeners are selling us too high. I think you're selling us short a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I, for one, think that's one of the nicest things anyone's ever said about
us.
Yes,
thank you.
And we do have a ton of these reviews. As I said, you know, we are... backed up. So if you've left a review to this point,
you got to stop using the term backed up.
I just thought of so many jokes. Yeah.
Clogged up.
No, that's not better.
No.
Wait, you guys just get your mind out of the gutter. You two are filthy anyway.
Is the gutter
back? We have a ton of, we're backed up on reviews. We're going to be reading all of them. So if you've left us a review to this point, we will read it. It's coming soon. And we promise we don't do this for our egos. It really helps us move up the iTunes rankings. We've explained this before, but I'll explain it again for new listeners. When you leave a review on iTunes, they don't aggregate. So you have to go to each country's iTunes. It's kind of annoying. I wish Apple would fix it. If anyone from Apple is listening to this,
please fix it.
Just do this. It's really not that hard. But when you're in a country, it doesn't show up. Your actual rating doesn't show up until you have over 5 reviews.
Oh, is that right?
So this actually for Canada, like you can still see them, but it won't show up on the side under it. So this for Canada was actually the 5th review we
got. Huge one then. Thank you.
So that tips us over the top. We actually did get a 6th review the other day from Canada as well. So that's in the log of reviews coming. But anyway, leave us the iTunes review and we'll read them on the show.
Also, we are doing a fantasy basketball draft. We're going to have 2 different leagues. We're going to have 1 head-to-head. We're going to have 1 roto. In order to get in on our fantasy draft league with us, all you got to do is like our Facebook page. And once you like our Facebook page, the very top post on our Facebook page, just leave your email and join us for fantasy basketball because it's coming up.
Right, and I'd hurry up because I feel like we're getting a lot of people joining in on that, and you just don't want to miss out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we get in some news?
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, the Cavs and Tristan Thompson remain $14 million apart in their contract negotiations. Apparently, Luke Ridnour is going to sit out next season. You might remember he got traded from the Magic to the Grizzlies to the Hornets to the Thunder to the Raptors and then waived by the Raptors. Karl Anthony Towns already calls Kevin Garnett his mentor. And lastly in your news, Anthony Bennett reportedly agreed to a buyout with the Timberwolves. Some teams that are considering him are the Sixers and the Trailblazers. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
So I just feel bad for this kid. I mean, ever since he came into the league, you know, he was injured his first year. He definitely underperformed given his draft slot. He was also dealing with some other stuff. Then he got traded to the Wolves. Now it looks like the Wolves have officially agreed to a buyout term with Anthony Bennett. And I actually think it's a really good situation for both him and the Wolves, though. Like, I think this is the best possible outcome for both parties involved.
Yeah, absolutely. That part of it. Well, the Wolves are so loaded now in the front court is that there's just not really room for Anthony Bennett to get minutes. And with his contract, it's not really worth what they're paying him. So in that sense, yes, absolutely. Agreed 100%. But, man, the Cavaliers just did this kid so dirty. And it's all because, I forget the name of their GM at the time. He got fired. But, man, he just ruined Anthony Bennett. No one in the league had Anthony Bennett on their top 10 of draft boards that night, and the Cavaliers took him one, which is probably the most Cleveland thing of all time. Sorry, Cavs fans.
Well, since you've been talking about this, I've just been thinking of a few teams that might want to pick him up. I mean, he's still worth a look, right?
The problem is with this contract, if he doesn't clear, is there are only really three teams that can pick him up. You know, Portland and Philly have the most cap space right now.
I was thinking the Raptors would look into them as well.
But there's now sources saying the Raptors want nothing to do with them. Because you'd think that too, because the Canada connection.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was
saying.
But
Utah also has the money to make this happen, but there's just not really any interest there. So realistically, I could see him going to, or if somebody's going to pick up a salary, put it that way, the only places I really could see him if Utah and Toronto don't want him are Philly and Portland. But Anthony Bennett can still be an NBA player. Like, there are reasons to have Anthony Bennett on your team. He's just never, ever, 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 ever remotely going to be that number one pick. And I feel bad for him because he wasn't projected to be a one pick, but now he's probably going to be labeled as the biggest draft bust ever.
Really?
I mean, outside of Odin, maybe, or a guy like Michael Olowokandi, somebody like that who went number. Kwame Brown is another one that stands out. I think Kwame Brown's probably still the biggest bust to me.
Maybe Darko.
Yeah, Darko's up there. Darko was a two pick, so at least he's got that. I mean, that was what makes Darko just historically bad is, well, one, because Larry Brown never played him, because Larry Brown just doesn't play rookies for some reason, which I'm still trying to figure out. But what makes Darko just look so bad is that LeBron went one, Darko went two, and then it was Melo, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade, 3, 4, right. 5. Like, good Lord, that top five. I mean, that top five is incredible. We talk about 2003 as one of the all-time great drafts. So you had four options that would have just been an incredible franchise-changing superstar, but you picked Darko. And can you imagine how good those Pistons teams of the mid-2000 would have been if they had taken Melo or Chris Bosh or Dwayne Wade? I mean, this is a team that was routinely in the ECF, won a championship, and could have drafted a superstar. You can't really argue because they were successful for a long time, but that's one of the bigger what-ifs in NBA.
Well, it would have changed the NBA as we know it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you got to feel bad for Bennett, though, and this is all after his revival tour. He averaged 15.5 points, a little over 10 rebounds in the Pan Am games. And then on Canada's Olympic run, or attempted an Olympic run, he led the team in field goal percentage and rebounding. It wasn't a good fit in Minnesota because his team option, or his player option, wasn't going to be picked up by the team. So behind, in front of him, there was Gorgui Dieng, there was Payne, there was Peck, there was Garnett, now there's Towns. He needs to go to a situation where he has some time to play.
Right, and I the reason the Raptors came to mind is you mentioned, and you just mentioned it there, he's pretty good at rebounding, and I know the Raptors as a team were not that great at rebounding.
No, they sure weren't, and especially with Patrick Patterson being there.
Exactly, so
supposedly it's a starting power forward.
Right. So my thought process there was, why not grab a guy who's doing pretty good on the boards. But
that's going to be interesting. But that was, you know, I guess we might as well transition right into them. Toronto Raptors. This is our Atlantic Division preview episode for those of you who are maybe listening for the first time. We did the Pacific Division last week, and we usually put the midweek up second, obviously. We do the preview first, but I was out of town. The midweek went up first, and now here we are. So this is our Atlantic Division preview. And since we're talking about Toronto, the Atlantic Division champion last year and the first team we're going to preview is the Raptors. They were 49-33 last year. And I think for me, the big theme of the Raptors is this team quietly, low-key, if you might say, had one of the best offenses in the league last year, had an offensive rating right up there with Cleveland, right up there with Golden State, the elite teams. The problem is, and this was on full display of them getting bounced out in the playoffs against Washington, is they couldn't play defense worth a lick.
Right.
And they were giving up close to 102 points a game on average. And so we've seen this offseason Toronto really put an emphasis on defense. You know, they draft DeLon Wright, who is a defensive-oriented guard out of Utah. You go out and you sign Damari Carroll, who we know was a defensive guy in Atlanta. You go and get a guy like Biombo. And other, you know, other big moves they made, they locked up Jonas Valanciunas to another four-year deal, which is
Scola.
Big. Scola came in. Those are more, you know, Justin and I were talking about this off the mic yesterday. Those are more offensive-oriented guys. But we've really seen Toronto, and Masai Ujiri has said this, that they want to focus on defense this year. And the big departure is Lou Williams, reigning sixth man of the year, now out in L.A.
Which I'll tell you, man, I was reading a lot of fan sites. Raptors fans were not on Lou Williams' side. They thought he was a ball stopper. They said he was doing ISO more than they've ever seen Melo do ISO.
Yes, and that's the thing with Lou
Williams. So they weren't fans of him.
You know, we saw this for years in Philly, is when Lou Will's on, he looks amazing, and he can make shots all over the floor. But Lou Will is a gunner. He is a ball chucker who can't play defense worth a dime. And that's the problem is, you know, it seemed like at times that it encouraged the Raptors to shoot more and take more bad shots. And so I think that letting him go does improve their defense. And while you lose a little bit of that punch,
you have
you
Corey
can make
Joseph.
Up for it.
And yeah, you have Corey Joseph that can help potentially in the backcourt there coming in off the bench.
Yeah.
I think the biggest question here is Damari Carroll a product of the system, or is he the real deal?
Because they throw him a lot of money. He's the highest player or paid player on that team right now.
Well, if you look at his contract is the equivalent of, during the 13-14 season, a $42 million contract. So if you're looking at it in that terms, like, it's really not all that much money.
Well, they're saying if he increases his game even more this year coming forward, and then the salary cap going up, it's going to look like a really good deal for them.
Well, all he has to do is be a good wing defender.
Exactly.
And he's the best wing defender on the team. They also lost Greaves Vasquez. We haven't mentioned that yet. But if you look, they were bad defensively on the wing. They're horrid defensively on the wings. And then they were also really bad on the interior when Amir Johnson wasn't playing. But I think that a lot of the moves that we've seen them make have been to help them play more small ball. I mean, we saw them just get dominated by the Wizards in the first round. And I think that a lot of what they were trying to fix, apart from the defense, your point, Kevin, though, is building a team that can be built to compete in the playoffs. And we saw them just get dominated whenever they tried to play small. And right. Now that they don't have that crutch of Amir Johnson at the five, they're going to be playing Valanciunas a lot more and Luis Scola a lot more. And I think that might be a good thing for him.
I feel like getting rid of Amir Johnson, they kind of made up for it for just getting Bismack Biyombo. He's just a cheaper option, and they play fairly similar games.
Yeah, he was there for 6 years, too. He was like the Raptors' fan favorite, if you will. I mean, he was the guy that had just been there longest. If you look at the Phoenix Suns, it's like Markieff Morris has been there the longest. You have these players that fan bases, whether or not they're still good anymore, Nene with the Wizards, that the fans really appreciate because of their longevity with the team.
So here's a question. DeMar DeRozan's coming up in a contract year. And, you know, I guess how much money do you think DeRozan's worth? And
I don't
think
the max.
Raptors should.
I think you got. So this is the other thing I wanted to point out. This kind of has to do with your question there. DeMar DeRozan, by 2K, we know 2K is coming out in less than a week now.
Oh, my God, I'm so excited. I get excited about nothing more in life than NBA 2K.
Listen
really?
To this.
Yeah, apart from like Christmas, when Christmas Day games are on, NBA 2K is my favorite day of the year.
Well, listen to this. DeRozan was ranked the 6th best shooting guard in the league. Damari Carroll was ranked the 10th best small forward, and Kyle Lowry is the 9th best point guard by NBA 2K. So that's three really good players on the same team, on the starting lineup, you would assume. I mean, unless something crazy really goes on. So then my question is, they won 49 games last year. Can they break 50?
Yeah, I don't expect them to. I think that they're bringing on so many pieces, it's going to take for a little while for them to coerce as a unit.
I agree. With the new assistant coaches, they got three new assistant coaches. I think that's going to throw the chemistry off for just a little bit. I think last year they had a really strong start to the season. I don't think they'll have that strong start, and I'm worried that fans might panic right off the bat.
Well, the East is just tougher, too, and I mean, we haven't mentioned...
It's tougher, but it's wide open. I mean, apart from the Cavs, like, 2 through 6 really is anybody's game.
Oh, I agree with that in terms of seeding, but I think there's going to be more variance there between the 2 and the 6, so I think they take a few losses there. I think Toronto's still in the mix, but you mentioned him. We haven't mentioned him really at all yet. Kyle Lowry was kind of bad last year. After a career year the year before when they really looked like they were on the rise, they need a bounce back year from Kyle Lowry, or I just can't see this team going any further.
So do you not think that DeRozan's a max player? With a shooting guard position as shallow as it is?
That's kind of what pushes it more towards max for me. But DeRozan just is a little too much of a gunner for my like, but I can see why they would pay him max money, and I don't think it's a bad thing if they pay him max money. Because he doesn't play my favorite style of game, but he's still efficient. I mean, the guy's one of the best mid-range shooters in the league, as much as I hate the mid-range jumper.
And he also gets to the free throw line a lot.
Yeah, I think you got to lock him in no matter what you do. You got to make sure he comes back.
Well, and you got to surround them with shooters, too. So if you have a shooting guard who can't shoot threes, and I understand why Kevin doesn't like that, it's fine as long as you have other shooters on your team. So
right.
If they do lock him in for some sort of max deal or something close to it, they have to surround him with talent. It's like with Ricky Rubio. It's fine to have a point guard that can't shoot, but everybody else needs to be able to.
Right, and I think it's worth mentioning that the two of the new assistant coaches that came in were coaching for the Bulls and the Thunder, and both of those teams ranked within the top 15 in team defense, so you would expect their defense to stay just as solid. Their defense to get better,
it better get better.
But the other thing is they were also on the Bulls and Thunder, who have much playoff experience, so these coaches know what to do when it comes playoff times. I think the whole thing for the Raptors is obviously I don't think the team or the fans maybe expect them to win it all.
But get to the second round.
The only I think it's get to the second round or it's going to be a disappointing season.
So what's your ceiling for them? You think it's second round or it's a disappointment? Where do
depending
you think their ceiling is?
Depending on who they play. No, I think it's the second round.
I think their ceiling is the conference finals.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there are scenarios where I could see them going to the conference finals. I still, as I've said on this show, I don't think anybody's beating Cleveland in the East.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Depends
on
who
they maybe be the two.
Yeah, it depends on who they're matched up against is my problem. And I see the Bulls being a problem. I see the Wizards worked them last time. Unless the Wizards have something crazy go on, I think they might be able to do that again, depending on how they meet in that, you know, lineup.
So 49 games, you think they're going to win less than 49, Justin?
I think they'll get 52.
I'm going less as well, and it's the gel period, and it's I think the East is a little bit better, and that's not a knock against Toronto. I think Toronto is going to be right in the mix. I just think they'll lose a few games.
I think they're going to lose more at the beginning than the end.
Agreed.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Drive-In Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Raveus, Tim Tompkins, Justin Cousard. Follow us on Twitter at Drive-In Dish NBA. So the next team was one that we had a little bit of differing opinions about last year, and one that we've already talked about pretty extensively on the midweek, so we're going to make this section a little bit shorter. The Boston Celtics finished 40-42 last year, got into the playoffs as a 7 seed, which I don't think any of us projected going into the season. Their big addition this offseason was bringing David Lee in from Golden State.
And Amir Johnson.
Both on pretty team-friendly deals. In the draft, they brought in Terry Rozier, which I thought they reached a little on. I think a lot of people feel like they reached on. That was a guy they probably could have got when they picked second, and they reached on him all the way up at the late teens. But I do like the RJ Hunter pick, which was towards the end of the first round, where I thought they got a lot of great value because he can stretch the floor, and I think he is, if nothing else, can be a pretty solid shooter. And the biggest reason I don't like the Rozier pick is because he pretty much plays the same game as Marcus Smart. And I don't get, you know, you already have Marcus Smart, though, so I don't understand what you're doing at the point guard position.
And we talked about it. We talked about this with Griffin last week, and pretty much what he was saying, too, is he doesn't think anybody on the team is a lock to be on this team for very long. Like, anybody's expendable to get that star player. That's what he was thinking. And so my thinking with that is they picked him up so in case, hey, they got a shot at a star, but they have to send Marcus Smart for it, they're going to pull the trigger.
Well, and they have, and I see that. And Boston does have probably the best collection of certified assets. You know, we've said this before on the show. Boston and the Sixers both have a ton of assets, but Boston's are solid and proven. The Sixers, you're banking a lot more on picks and unproven guys, so it's a little more hazy depending which way you want to go. But Boston, I agree with that. It seems like they're gearing up for the next James Harden trade. Mm-hmm. So you have to assume somebody big like that goes on the market soon. DeMarcus Cousins, maybe?
I think any big name player that goes on the market, the Celtics are going to be on top of that list.
Absolutely.
Of people.
And the biggest thing that I like about the Celtics is Brad Stevens, I think, is a phenomenal coach. He did such a good job with that talent last year. And I don't know if you guys have ever paid attention to this, but watch Brad Stevens call a play and then run it out of a timeout. And they score every single time. And
they also,
it's crazy. Every time he draws up a play out of a timeout, they score the next possession, regardless of what it is. Keep an eye out for it. Watch it this year. Seriously.
They went into the playoffs winning. I mean, they won six straight to go into the playoffs. They were riding a hot streak for sure. So I'm curious to see if they can keep it going. What was it, Tim? We said it last episode. They're very in every position they have a player that's okay.
Yeah, like, their entire roster is made up of okay. They have that log jam at power forward. David Lee, Amir Johnson, Olynyk, Solinger, Jerebko. I just think that they need to find, because if you watch the Celtics last year, it was a constant rotation of people that weren't familiar with their roles. And mm-hmm. I think given the logjam at power forward, that they really just need to find a combination that works and that's stable.
Yeah, I also think they need to get tougher in the paint. I was looking at this. I don't think anybody...
Well, that's what Amir Johnson's for.
I agree. And I think that's a good first step. I think they may need to start making more steps to that. Nobody on the team... I didn't check Amir Johnson's stats because he wasn't on the team last year, but nobody on the team was averaging a block a game. Everyone was under a block a game, which is surprising to me. I feel like there's always that one
Solinger
person.
Solinger gets you about a block a game.
Yeah.
Like he's a 1-1-1 guy.
Solinger and Olynyk are guys that I think are in prove-it years, because they've been here now for a few years, and there's been talk
about them being young. Well, Olynyk is so new. I would say more so with Solinger.
Solinger's got to stay healthy. That's the biggest thing with him, is he's got to stay healthy
for
a full season.
Yeah, he has a broken back.
Yeah, but even when he is healthy, he just seems kind of slow out there. I don't really know, and that's an eye test thing. There's no, you know, I don't have an advanced stat to pull out on that, but it's. I think it's a prove-it year for Solinger for sure.
Celtics fans love him though,
right? Well, and the other thing with all the Boston Celtics is they were 27th in the league for threes last year, so I'm curious to see how they can address that.
Well, Olynyk has looked better shooting the three.
Yeah, and
that's something.
Yeah, we mentioned that he's like I believe it's top three, but I'm going to say top four just to be safe. And team for threes a game, three points made a game, which mm-hmm. is kind of funny to
no,
me.
And he had kind of a coming out party this summer too, along with Anthony Bennett. Though I don't think mm-hmm. he played in the pro-am games, but I could be wrong on that. I just think that they're counting on development from their younger players
right.
this year, especially Marcus Smart and to a lesser extent Olynyk.
Right. And then there's always that red flag with me with David Lee. He's just so much older than everybody on the team.
I mean, but at the same time, I think that David Lee was injured last year and that they accidentally started Draymond Green. And when it works so well,
you can't back out of that.
They just stop playing David Lee. But I think that David Lee is getting a really, like, he's not a bad rap, because that's the wrong verbiage I'm looking
right.
for. But I think people are underestimating how good he is, because it's not like he fell off the cliff last year. It's just that the lineup they had worked so damn
well.
No,
I agree.
He's a victim of circumstance. Yeah. I mean, it's just he was overqualified for the role that the Warriors needed him to fill, and that's why they went out and got Jason Thompson. But back to the Celtics, they made the playoffs last year, 40 wins. Do they make it again? Do they win more than 40
games?
Well,
I want to ask you, we didn't have a chance to ask you yet. What's your ideal starting lineup for this team? Mine is, I'll tell you while you're thinking of yours, mine's Thomas, Bradley, Crowder, Lee, and Johnson.
Yeah, well, that's right, because we talked with Griffin. You want Isaiah Thomas starting instead of being that six-man role.
I think you start your five best players.
I agree, because...
Well, and Crowder was so good.
We were talking about it. Marcus Smart's shooting like 36% field goal percentage.
Take your lineup and swap Thomas and Smart, just because I think... And the only reason I'm saying that, Thomas is a better player, but I like Thomas's punch off the bench... And I think Marcus Smart is the guy you've invested in to be your point guard of the future. So I think, or if you're using him as trade bait, he needs to be out there as much as possible too. I think people know what Isaiah Thomas is at this point.
Well, my problem
I still
with,
think the jury's kind of out on Marcus Smart.
My problem with that, if you have Thomas in your starting lineup, then when you bring in your backup players, like who is going to score?
Evan Turner. Well, the thing is, they have Evan Turner, and Evan Turner's a ball dominant guy. I don't think that you need Isaiah Thomas and Evan Turner out there sharing that many minutes.
That is terrifying, yeah. But you know, I'm more looking to the long term of the Celtics than letting Isaiah Thomas play. But anyway, so back to the original question: do they make the playoffs more than 40 wins?
I'm going to say they're going to be. I could see them going a game or two above and a game or two below. I don't think this team did too much to really push the needle either way. So I think they will make the playoffs, but I don't think they're going to get many more wins or many less wins. So I'm going to say they're going to be about the same.
I don't have them making the playoffs.
Okay.
How about 40 wins?
No, under. I just think that it's a lot of the East got better, that we're going to have the Heat. We're going to have the Pacers. I'm higher on the Pacers than some other people are.
Griffin.
Yeah. But I also think that... Danny, that this roster is not going to look anything remotely comparable.
By All-Star,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it would be interesting to see. So,
I go under, and I think they're out too. And that's a testament to the East getting better. I think Boston thrived in a really weak conference, and with the things that could happen and the way they kind of overachieved a bit last year, I'm going slightly under 40.
But I do think that a starting lineup of Thomas, Bradley, Crowder, Lee, and Johnson's enough to make the playoffs. So we'll see how it shakes up.
So you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rayfus, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzar. Like us on Facebook at Drive and Dish NBA podcast. So the third team we want to get to is the Brooklyn Nets, who went 38-44 last year. They've often been a punching bag on this show. Brooklyn fans... Well, I'm going to take it easy on you a little bit today because I actually kind of like their offseason. The biggest moves that Brooklyn did was, number one, using the stretch provision to get rid of Deron Williams. That horrific contract is gone. It's moved on. He's down in Dallas, and I know there were a lot of Nets fans calling for that. They did re-sign Brook Lopez. They did re-sign Thad Young, who they got last year. A guy like Toledovich is gone. And Mason Plumlee is gone in that trade to Portland. So those are probably the three biggest losses right there.
I said Toledovich.
That's the second one I said. Mm-hmm. And then Thomas Robinson is a guy they brought in for the bench. They brought in Shane Larkin. So it seems like the Nets are finally done overspending and going for the home run. And they realize that this team is not going to win a finals as it was established.
Right.
And now they just have to undo the damage because they just don't really have a lot of draft picks.
Well, and so, Kevin, this is something we were talking about last episode, that this year the Nets have like $84 million locked up, but the year after it's only going to be about 40, something like that. So there's always that small chance it's just a quick stutter in the team's building towards.
Well, you're going to lose Joe Johnson's salary, which is about $22 million alone, mm-hmm. which is going to go a long way. It's the problem with the Nets is, and they could be in a really good position after next year, they just don't have any draft picks.
Okay, I've been waiting for this. All right, okay. So let's talk about their next eight picks.
Okay.
2016 first rounder to Boston. Their 2016 second rounder can be swapped by the Clippers. Their 2017 first rounder can be swapped to Boston. Their 2017 second rounder goes to Atlanta. Their 2018 first rounder goes to Boston. Their 2018 second rounder goes either to Philly or Charlotte in a complicated situation that's not really worth explaining. Their 2019 second rounder goes to Charlotte, and their 2020 second rounder goes to Philly. They don't have a first round pick until 2019.
Billy King, ladies and gentlemen. Billy freaking King.
So they're going to have to do some trades to get some players.
Well, some of those are options, because there is this stipend rule.
Like, yeah, I was going to say, there's got to be a stipend rule
years
at that point.
But well, there's the option with Boston for one of them. But yeah, Boston on that KG Paul Pierce trade looks so bad in hindsight. And the fact they could have drafted Damian Lillard but traded for Gerald Wallace instead. But let's not keep harping on Brooklyn failures, and let's talk about what this team could be this year.
Well, Joe Johnson's in a contract year.
And you always talk about how players in contract years play really well. My thing is, like, and this is, I feel like this is the question looming around Brooklyn, is like, how many games can you win? How many teams can you beat with Brooke Lopez being the guy you built your team around?
They have to be healthy. I mean, there's no way around.
He has to be healthy.
He has to be healthy.
They can't do anything, I don't think, without Brooke Lopez playing like he did at the end of last year.
Bogdanović might play out of his mind.
No, he won't.
Okay.
I'll say this, though. They did get Brooke Lopez on a friendly deal.
They did.
For what his, and obviously injuries have a big part to deal with that, but for what they could have paid him, I think the Nets did a good job of relaxing a little bit. I also think Thad Young's on a really good deal, too.
I also think Thad Young, this is his year to really come out and do really
well.
And
shoot a three again.
Well, he was shooting threes with the Sixers, and then they totally took that away. He was making threes at a relatively good rate.
His percentage really dropped off once he went to the Nets. Donald Sloan, you mentioned that. You think that
I really
like
that pickup, honestly. They
got to get some development from Bogdanović.
Who's going to be their like playmaker guy when the team is down?
Joe. I'll answer right there for you. It's got to be ISO Joe at that point. I mean, you can go to Brooke Lopez, and he's going to be your main guy.
No, they're their playmaker, though. Like, who?
Who's their playmaker?
They don't have anybody that creates for anybody else. Jarrett Jack doesn't. Shane Larkin.
Yeah. Okay, I can see that.
Like, Bogdanović
is the last shot who I want taken.
Yes.
No, I agree with that. Because he's really good in those situations. But my thing is, like, during a game, like, when they just can't get a bucket and they need somebody to just do it.
Just run a pick and roll.
Who's going to be the guy?
It's a great question. And we know they're kind of stuck in limbo right now, for better or for worse. But I think they've done a pretty good job of getting themselves out of total hell like they were last year. Unfortunately, they're just going to be paying the price for the next few years over
till 2019.
So it's going to be tough. They're going to have money is the one thing I'll say.
Every team.
Yeah, but with Billy King, he'll actually spend it. We know how that works. I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, but we know it happens.
Every team spends 90%. You know, even the 76ers take on contracts, so they hit that floor. Like, teams spend 90%. So all the teams are spending 90%. I don't think the outlook's good for this team. I think that they should be packed up and shipped to Seattle, honestly.
Oh, that's...
Send them to Vegas.
Wow.
This team is bad.
But what's that got to do with the city?
Well, no, I'm not saying... I didn't talk smack about the city. I'm just... This team is so mismanaged. Their lineup is awful, really. And they don't have a first-round pick until 2019. And they don't have a second-round pick. They have one going into this year.
And I'm
going
to be honest, when you hear these big name players talking about changing teams, I haven't heard them even once mention the Nets.
Well, it's
not like that's the destination.
No,
team.
You go play for the Nets.
Money. Let's make this as clear as possible. If somebody from Brooklyn pays them a ton of money to come to Brooklyn, they will go to Brooklyn.
Yeah,
it's
an
attractive destination.
They can only pay the same amount
wise
as anybody else, though.
I understand that, but I'm saying Brooklyn is an attractive lifestyle.
But if you're looking
destination
at it, the Knicks are also looking for that kind of a player like that. And I'm sure if I'm looking at the Nets or the Knicks, I'm gonna go to the Knicks.
Yeah. Would you?
Yeah, yes. Madison.
I agree with that too. But they're both a dumpster fire. Which one am I? The Knicks have been bad for 50 years. The Nets have been bad for 10.
Yeah, but you got Phil Jackson in there now.
The Knicks have a mascot.
Great. Oh, so do the Nets.
who's their mascot now?
The Brooklyn Knight.
He's no longer. They got rid of
really?
The Brooklyn. Remember,
no.
we talked about this on the
yeah,
show.
They
got
we did
because
talk
it was
about
scary.
This.
He
it
scared
was
children.
No, I forgot. I completely forgot about.
Then you
this,
insulted
honestly.
The Philly fanatic.
Yeah.
I don't
want
to get this.
Yeah, get the, that's just wrong. We're not even going to get into how wrong that is. But in all seriousness, I think the Nets are, they'll be what they usually are. They'll be floating around the 8th seed. They'll be, Billy King will somehow still have a job.
Well, okay, so Kevin, me and Tim talked about this, and now I'm going to ask you. 38 wins got a team to the 8th seed. Do you think you need more than 38 wins to get the 8th seed?
Yeah, absolutely. The okay. East is better this year. I mean, mm-hmm. That's going to be the theme of every East preview we have, is that the East is a little bit better this year. Okay. I think there's 7 teams I can think of right off the top of my head.
We haven't gotten to the Sixers yet.
I'm going to ignore that for now. There are 7 teams that the 3 of us combined think are playoff locks, and I think the 8 seed is going to be more competitive because I think certain teams are going to get better. So, no, I don't think that...
I could see Milwaukee. Like, I don't think Milwaukee's a lock. I just I don't believe in Michael Carter-Williams.
Really? I think Milwaukee's more of a lock than Indiana is.
No, I think Paul George and Monty Ellis combined will get... them into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they're both going to get in, so it's, you know, all about seeding at that point. But so 38 games and make the playoffs. Do you think they're in?
No.
I don't think they're in, and I think they lose a few.
Yeah, I think they're closer to 30.
All right. Well, make it a clean sweep for all 3 of us. I think they lose less. I think they don't make the playoffs. So why don't we change gears then and begin to transition? This is the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Cousart. Check out our website, driveanddishpodcast.com. So the next team, and I know our listeners have just been waiting for this one for so long, the Philadelphia 76ers. We have arrived. Here we are. The Sixers won 18 games last year.
Their odds to win the championship next year is 350-1.
So
that's something. Out of 350 times, they would win once.
So things that have happened in the offseason. I mean, the biggest news is Joel Embiid is not playing this year.
I don't think that's true.
I feel like that's low.
Yeah.
Like it would... I'm not like I like the Sixers, but I feel like that's kind of low. Like
yeah, could... that's a bit low.
Okay.
Anyways, Joel Embiid got hurt. He's not playing this year.
I mean, I can't see any circumstance.
There's
no matter how many times,
absolutely.
How many times you played it out that the Sixers would win a championship.
If they all just gel and everybody plays
basketball players.
Out of their mind, Noel has a year. Like. Okafor has a year. Tony Roten is like the best point guard to ever live. Like, I could see it.
To win a championship. I see. I've
crazier
look at the,
things have happened.
Looking at the West, it would have to happen 1,000 times.
I'm not saying it would happen many times. I'm just saying you could find a way, a very slim
all right,
way.
Guys, we're talking about the Sixers. We don't get to do this very often, or we do this sometimes too often.
We do
this
all the time.
This is our preview, and I don't care about their championship window or their odds. Their odds are low. Anyways, Joel Embiid is not playing. Jahlil Okafor is here. He's playing. Him and Nerlens Noel, going to be the big question, is because Nerlens is going to move to the 4 this year. He'll still get minutes at the 5 when Okafor is on the bench. But the offense is going to change a little bit, and that's probably the biggest thing. Dario Saric is still overseas. They have 4 picks next year. Rashawn Holmes.
That's a thing, though, is he wants to come over here.
Oh, yeah. I think Dario's coming next year, and we'll
yeah.
have 4 first-rounders. I think the Sixers are going to look drastically different. But right now, they're going to be a bad team again this year. I know this, but again,
what
we're talking
we got
about
Jared
the future.
Wallace.
It's kind of... it's
Jared Wallace isn't going to make the team.
It's the same thing as last year. A season-ending injury to Embiid. No real big offseason moves.
Okafor is an
impact Okafor is a
player.
Huge offseason
you had Nerlens Noel last year. Like they just
he played.
I'm talking.
He played
talking
so
about
well.
Talking about draft or free agency. Excuse me.
Okay.
Talking about free agency. That this offseason looks a lot like the last offseason.
Which is fine because it's about developing young talent. I don't want the Sixers to go out and make a splash and be a mediocre 8 seed.
I'm not gonna sugarcoat it though. The Embiid thing that really sucks.
It
like
sucks.
That put us back another year or two
Well, losing Embiid put us back a year, but you have Okafor, and as I've said, you have 4 picks and Dario coming next year. Not to mention you have the Lakers pick, so you have the right to swap there as long as they're not top 3. You have the right to swap with the Kings, who could very well go off the rails this year.
I also
awful.
Want them to hold their opponents to a shooting percentage a little bit lower. They were pretty bad. Opponent shot 46% against them.
I have a question. Mbah Mute, they didn't re-sign him.
Correct.
And I'm just wondering if you guys feel that that is indicative of their feelings towards Embiid.
I don't think it's that. I think Bamute was only there initially to provide that mentorship for Embiid coming into the league. Now that it's a year away, I don't think it's really that big of a deal. Listen, Embiid is I'm treating Embiid as a fan as a luxury at this point. We'll see. When he gets on the court, we'll see.
Will the Sixers pick up Embiid's team option?
I think you have to. Yeah, you have to.
Especially
with a number three pick in him. He's healthy, and if he somehow gets over this foot injury and is healthy, he has the potential to be generational.
I just see, because the team
They have room. Right. They have cap room. Like, every year they have to take on dump salary in order to hit the floor.
I mean, they're still...
I mean, they have the cap room. They have it.
Okay.
And plus, the cap's going to be going up.
They
have so much cap room.
That's a good argument. Would you start Okafor and Noel together?
Yeah, you have to. I mean, that's the Okafor and Noel, realistically, are your guys going forward. Okafor is clearly your five. Nerlens, you want to see if he can transition to play the four, because you're going to have to worry about them beat anyway. There are going to be fit issues, but they have to play together. These are the guys that you want and have invested in, along with a guy like Robert Covington. The Sixers fleeced the Kings this offseason and got the picks and Stauskas, who I'm pretty excited about, especially after seeing him play for Team Canada. The biggest question for me is their point guard situation, and that they have 22 players going into their training camp roster.
But they got Kendall Marshall. If you look at Kendall Marshall,
although he's not going to start the season,
he's not going to start. But if you look at Kendall Marshall's stats, he has improved every single year since he's been in the league. Stat-wise, but we've talked about this on the show before. I really, really like the pickup by the Sixers. My biggest concern for you guys was that your players were going to be, and I feel like I'm beating a dead horse right now, but your players were going to be learning bad habits. They were going to be getting the ball in bad spots because they were playing with bad guards, and they were going to be learning how to force shots, and I don't think that's what you should be learning how to do when you're developing a team. And I think that Kendall Marshall, once he comes in,
will help.
He's not your point guard moving forward. You don't want him on your team in anything other than a third guard role in a few years, but right now he can get Noel and Okafor the ball where they want it.
And the other thing I really like, and you know, Kevin and me have talked about this numerous times, is Robert Covington is like the diamond that came out of this rebuild.
Well,
like,
and that's the whole, you know, when you talk about getting not signing a vet and getting someone else, that's what you ideally are going for. A guy like Covington,
a rotation
player,
who was
in the D League, nobody had him. You turn him into a serviceable NBA rotational player. Teams around the league would benefit having Covington. I'm not just saying that because I'm a Sixers fan. The guy can legitimately shoot the three. Our offense went from maybe the worst of all time and instantly improved to slightly respectable and average just by putting Covington on the floor.
He was hitting 17. He was getting about 17 points per game, shooting 40% from three and making about six, almost seven threes a game. Like, he's legit. That 40% isn't on him only taking a few shots.
I also think Collis Thompson showed a lot of growth down the stretch, too. I mean, he was bad at the beginning of the year, but he also had a viral infection, and he lost 20 pounds. I mean, this is a guy who missed 3 weeks because he was sick. You know, that's no joke. So I think the shooting is there a little bit more, and I think you're going to see that with Stauskas, and I think you can see that with Thompson and Covington if they continue to develop. I think offensively they're going to change a little bit because they were a running team, and with Okafor you can't do that. I mean, he's a post-up guy.
I do worry a little bit that this might be the season or next season might be the season that the fans turn on Hinkie, and I think that could start some problems. If the fan base is calling for Hinkie to be gone, and Hinkie's gone before he can complete his plan, is when I think the Sixers will really hit a problem.
I think Sixers fans have been miraculously patient, which is something you don't often say in the city of Philadelphia, which I think has gone a long way. And so I think that I agree. I want to see improvement this year, and when we get into our picks, I think they will improve this year. I think Okafor alone improves the team.
But
what's
improvement? Is 25 wins enough improvement?
25-30 is ideally what I'm looking at for them
this
year.
You're looking at 30 this year with you can make the argument that you guys got better.
30's the ceiling.
I don't necessarily think that's very much true, but I can also make the argument that everyone in the East got better.
Right.
So why would they win more games if everybody else also got better?
Because I don't think everybody in the East got better, and I think the Sixers are a better team than they were last year.
Yeah,
we're not going to win 19 games.
But
again,
if the majority of the teams in the East got better, and I think that the majority did, why would the Sixers win more games?
Because we'll compete more and we'll battle more. I mean, we're going to win more games. I don't know how. There's going to be variants. There's going to be a team that drops off that we are going to predict too high. And there's going to be, it just happens. The Sixers are a better team than they were last year. They're not going to win 19 games again, unless there's injuries. Injuries are the only thing that I could see derailing this team.
So, and now that you guys are in your third year, has this rebuilding process, talking talent-wise, been justified?
This sure as hell beats doing what the Celtics and what the Nets are doing, making it into the bottom seed and then getting blasted by way more talented teams and then...
But are you happy with the talent that you've acquired?
Covington, Noel, Okafor, I'm happy with those.
I'd be
three.
Happier if Embiid was healthy, but that's part of the game, and that's the risk you take with Embiid because you think he can be so good. When all said and done, yeah, it stinks that we probably had to sacrifice another year, but you still got Okafor who can fill the Embiid role if Embiid just isn't going to play. And we still have four picks in Dario.
So are you happy with the talent you've acquired?
Yeah, I'll be really happy next year when they're all here. And that's when and next year is when I really think the improvement comes. It stinks that it got delayed another year, but this team can make moves next year.
No, you guys, the Sixers did the right thing by drafting Embiid. You can't write revisionist history on that.
I'm not.
How long do the Sixers fans have to trust the process?
5 years, because that's what they said. 3 to 5 years when Hinkie initially got hired. It's tough, and it's hard, and it's asking for an unbelievable amount of patience. But I would, having seen what I saw for the last decade before that, I'll take it. Because slogging through the mud as an 8 seed is not any better. It's a meaningless battle. I'd rather have the hope of being great one day than have no hope at all.
You guys got Pierre Jackson?
I don't know if he makes the team, honestly.
Really?
I think there's a chance he does, but I think Kendall Marshall, Tony Roten, and Isaiah Cannon, if you keep him, that's 3 guards right there. We're not going to, you know.
Well, they need guards, though. I mean, let's be honest.
But we have 2s, though. Point guards, we only need 3. I mean, maybe he makes the 15-man roster, but. Pappy Jack is a great follow on Twitter, and the guy is super entertaining, and he's worked really hard, and I hope he makes it in that regard. But and because I'm really low on Isaiah Cannon, but
I'd rather have him than Cannon for sure.
Yeah, I probably would too, but I think the team trusts Cannon more, and the problem is because Roten and Marshall are going to be coming off injuries, and they may not be ready at the start of the year. Is you have to put somebody out there. And Cannon's ran an NBA team before. Pierre Jackson hasn't played in anything other than the D League in 2 years.
But he was the MVP of the D League
2 years ago before he tore his Achilles. That's a hard injury to recover from, a very hard injury to recover from.
I think he proved it a bit this summer.
A little bit. I don't think a ton. I think he also thinks he takes bad shots at times. And I like Pierre Jackson. I think there's a chance he makes it, but I think that's far from a lock. So 18 games. I think they win more just off Okafor.
I have them winning more, but I don't have them winning any more than 25. I think 25 is their ceiling.
Yeah, I don't see them making more than 25, but I do see them making cracking 20 this
year. Yeah, I'd put it like 21, 22.
Okay.
I just also want to point out before we move on that for all the crap we've taken about tanking, the Sixers have not been the worst team in the league.
Nope,
ever.
That is the Knicks.
Yep, and that's what we're going to get into next. The one and only New York Knicks, who were super fun to discuss last year. The Knicks won 17 games last year, and it was hilarious because the Knicks won 2 straight games at the end of the year to bump them down to the 4 pick, and a lot of people were really upset because that kept them out of the, you know, Karl Towns, D'Angelo Russell, Jahlil Okafor, quote-unquote sweepstakes, if you call it that. However, they did draft Porzingis, and it's a forward-thinking move, and I said this at the time, I really like this move for the Knicks, and I actually, believe it or not, really like a lot of the moves the Knicks made this offseason, despite the fact that they didn't get any of their targets. I mean, even Greg Monroe didn't want to go and play there. But
Porzingis is a great, great pickup.
And he's a good long-term pickup, but they made some other sneaky good moves, too. Aaron Aflalo got on a really good deal. They got Robin Lopez on a good deal.
Kyle O'Quinn.
Derek Williams.
They also drafted...
Don't say Derek Williams and feed him like that.
They also drafted Jerry and Grant, though. Dude. Jerry and Grant has been doing really well this offseason.
Knicks fans are going to be screaming in delight off of Derek Williams' ability to play in the air and hit alley-oops. Alley-oop Williams is what they're going to be calling him.
The Sixers have a better chance of winning the championship than them chanting Derek Williams.
I don't know. You get two really good dunks from Williams, I'm sure they're going to start chanting.
He's also got to get off the bench, too.
True, but it's also worth mentioning they lost Quincy Acey, Cole Aldridge, Bargnani, Tim Hardaway Jr., Shane Larkin, Jason Smith, Alexei Shved. They did.
Alexei Shved, and we mentioned this before, has the most lucrative contract in Europe.
Mm.
Okay. I don't know how that's possible. Well, actually, no. Europe doesn't really pay for that reason. They're younger players. It's really bizarre how some of that is. Like, Dario only gets about 10 minutes a game in Europe.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah. They just play vets all the time.
Mm.
But anyways, so back to the Knicks, though. Carmelo Anthony's got to stay healthy, number one. That's the biggest thing. They lost a lot of games with Melo last year. Melo alone instantly improves this team above a 17-win team. Yeah.
Melo, in theory, by himself, should be able to drag a team into the playoffs in the East.
And Aflalo himself is a really efficient scorer. He was scoring 18 points per game 2 seasons ago when he was with Orlando.
He's a good two-way player, too.
I agree. He's a very tough defender. So, mm-hmm. I mean...
And then Robin Lopez, I mean, that really helps out their defense. I think Robin Lopez was an extremely underrated pickup.
I think O'Quinn was a pretty underrated pickup.
Yeah, he was really,
like,
he was really good.
Players on the Knicks.
I think O'Quinn is going to do really well. I think
he was good in Orlando.
The thing is, the Knicks were able to keep their payroll in a manageable spot where if they can make a play at a big name player, they can still do it. They have players that are going to get them some wins. I think they're going to do pretty well. Porzingis, he's going to be good, but like we said, he's a project. It's going to take him a year or two to develop.
It's a long-term move, which is what the Knicks need to be making. It stinks for Melo, but Melo also could have left. I mean, the fact of the matter is the Knicks window probably isn't going to open for a few years, and Melo is Melo's already borderline out of his prime, and he's definitely not going to be the superstar he was and still kind of is in a few years, but you have to be thinking long-term with this team. And Porzingis, if he reaches his potential, could be really, really good. I mean, you're talking about a 7-footer that can knock down the 3-ball like it's nothing.
Yeah, you're talking about he's coming into the triangle offense, too. So he's going to, you know, start his career learning that. So, you know.
Should they just stop with this triangle offense thing?
It didn't work last year at all. It was a pretty bad disaster last
year. Yeah, like they don't have the personnel for it. Should they just stop?
I don't know, man. If Jackson's gonna run it, then he's gonna run it. I mean, I don't know. That's what he lives by, you know. Like, that's his whole thing.
Yeah, but Derek Fisher's coaching the team. You got to let the coach be the coach.
Yeah, but
you have to have players that buy into the triangle. And the only reason they'd buy into the triangle is if they're going to be there long term. Now there are players on this roster that are going to be there at least semi long term, and they're professionals and they could buy in. Whereas last year you had everybody who was basically auditioning for contracts.
Right, but you're bringing in a rookie point guard, which I could see also being a problem trying to run the triangle. But
he's not going to start.
No, but
when he's there, it's going to be a trouble. But I also see his beginning, he's learning the triangle. So in a few years from now, he's going to be a master at it. And if he projects like all Knicks fans think, it's going to be a good move.
What's the likelihood that Carmelo Anthony is on the Knicks after the trade line?
I don't know. There's so many rumors with him being moved. So I could see him going.
He'd have to agree. It is the no trade clause.
Okay, so then this is the other thing that I wanted to point out. Melo, if he stays for 2 more years and gets traded, he gets a bonus. So you could also see him just waiting it out.
If he's healthy, I think it's about a 30% chance he's still on the roster after the break. If he's healthy and he's playing like old Melo, you have to sell high while you can. And if you're Melo, I'd imagine you want to go to a contender at this point because he was really visibly upset with all the losing last year.
Maybe, but at the same time, like, Melo had the chance to go to a contender in Chicago and chose the lifestyle. You can't hate on somebody for that. His wife owns a company in New York.
He's lived there a lot of the time.
Some people just, they want to live somewhere, and so winning's not the most important thing to them.
Oh, I understand that. I'm just saying, if he wants to go to a contender, if he's not sold on staying in New York, if the losing gets to him, I think there's a chance they move him. And I think there's a chance they move him anyway, because I really don't think they care about Carmelo Anthony's lifestyle.
No, but he has to agree. He has a no-trade clause.
And that's the thing. So it'll be interesting because they are New York-based. That's a big reason why he stayed. Like I said, Lala is a staple in New York. You know, Melo's lived there between Baltimore and there for a long time. So it's the whole reason he came back. But
and not moving your kids, having your kids transfer schools. I mean, when you have a family, there's so many things you have to take into account.
Well, I don't think they would. I think he would probably move at that point. But that's just a Melo thing, and that's not really relevant to where we're going here. But I think it's 30% if he's healthy. I really do. I think he'll agree to it if it's the right team. I think Melo, because Melo is the guy from that draft class who doesn't have a ring and gets the most scrutiny about it. I think there's something to be said about that too. You know, it gets you after a while. We saw it visibly getting LeBron, I think, in 2011 in the finals.
Yeah, I'm just not sure how much it gets to Melo. I lost a lot of respect for Melo last year when he wasn't on the bench because he said, quote unquote, it's a distraction. I think you have to be there on the bench. And you're being paid, too.
That's like Jack Black not coming to a wedding and saying he didn't want to be a distraction to the people getting married. It happened.
Oh.
I was there.
Valid.
I was like, is there an inside joke we're not getting here?
No, that happened to me, so, you know. So, do you more or less wins for the Knicks next year?
More. And I'm going to be, maybe I'm stupid for saying this because I said this last year too, but I think they might be the 8th this year. I'm not ready to pick that, so they'll definitely win more than 17. If Melo's healthy, they'll win 17 games just off that alone.
Do you see them doubling their wins?
Well, if you're going to say
that they could make the playoffs, and that's doubling. Yeah, I think they could double their wins fairly easy. I just think that they have a, you know, depending on their point guard play, they have an actual starting
lineup right now. This conversation, I was convinced that I was going to put these guys in the 8th seed. But for whatever reason, during all of our conversation, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. I don't have them making the playoffs.
I have them doubling their wins but not making the playoffs. Mm-hmm.
I think they can sneak in. I don't necessarily say I'm going to have them as a lock to make the playoffs, that if I were finished crafting my 1 through 8 yet. But I think they can sneak in. And now that I'm actually doing the math, I think they double. So they're definitely going to win more than 17. I think we all can agree with that.
All right, so the Eastern Conference was Toronto, Boston, Brooklyn, Philly, New York. What does it look like after next season?
One team makes the playoffs.
One team makes the playoffs, but what's the order?
Toronto, Celtics, Knicks, Nets, Sixers.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, actually.
I've got Toronto, Knicks, Boston, Brooklyn, Philly.
Please, teach me how to
play basketball.
Gee, let me think. Sure.
The Drive and Dougal.
Wait, what's that?
It's like Google, if it's just the NBA.
All right, today I'm going to teach you about junk defenses. Some examples of these defenses would be the box and one, the 1-3 and a chaser, the 3-1 and a chaser, diamond and one, triangle and two, and the inverted triangle and two. Here's some points about the junk defense. If your team is better than the other team, there's no need to use a junk defense. Just play man-to-man or zone if you want. You shouldn't base your entire season's defensive plan on a junk defense, and if you use a junk defense, use it as a diversion or something to confuse the offense. The other thing to know about junk defense is it is a gamble and can often be easily beaten. You should be willing to change defenses quickly if needed. The reasons you would use a junk defense is to change tempo, it can hide a poor defensive player, it works best when you're playing against a team whose best player is their point guard. It's pretty much kind of just cutting the head off the snake, if you will. And these are the reasons junk defenses will work. A junk defense will work because they are confusing. Most teams don't plan for a junk defense because they're very rarely used and they don't want to take time out of their practice to work on something that they may never see. A junk defense is basically a zone defense. However, there will be two players that are playing man-to-man, so the players that are being guarded in a zone defense see the other players being guarded in a man-to-man, and this will throw them off and confuse them, which will also then make those players fixate on the two players being defended in the man-to-man. The two players being defended in the man-to-man are usually the best players on the court. They do this because, one, this will tire out their star player, and then they will also focus on that star player on the offensive side, then again tiring them out on both ends of the court. This will bring the star player hopefully down to earth and maybe make them need to come off the court and get some rest. Now, while this is happening, the other players on the offensive team that are being guarded in this junk defense will fixate on that player being defended man-to-man, or their two players being defended man-to-man. This will often make the offense lose its pace and start taking bad shots and forcing the ball. A lot of times you'll see this by a team that is outmatched by one main player. Like, a lot of the times they'll use this on LeBron James. That way, there is somebody always man-to-man on LeBron James, making him have tough shots, and then whoever LeBron James is guarding will make sure to be running back on their offensive possession so that LeBron James must run back with them, thus taking him out of the chance of getting a rebound and also making him run more and wearing him down. And that is why you would use a junk defense. They're not common, but they're used.
So what was that drive in Dougal?
So that was on the junk defenses that you can throw out in basketball.
And what is a junk defense?
Pretty much what you're doing. And
did he just explain that?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but let's explain it again.
For layman's terms, pretty much what you do is it's like for example, you could do a 3-1 where you have three players, or 3-2, I'm sorry, where you have three players playing zone. And then your two fastest, probably strongest defensive guys are playing man on their best two offensive players. And then, you know, so you make them have to take hard shots, and the three players that are in the zone defense are fixated on trying to make sure the people in the man getting man defensed against them, they're trying to get them out of it. So it throws off the offensive scheme and it slows down the game. The idea is to wear down their two best players.
Right. So basically, if you're game planning against LeBron James and Kevin Durant,
yes, you would do a 3-3. I think they call it a 3-2-2 runners.
I wonder if the new NBA 2K, the defensive abilities on the new NBA 2K are supposed to be so much better so that you can combat a team that, like, let's say you're playing online and how everybody likes to play with the Thunder or the Rockets, mm-hmm. or the Cavs. You can play with the Grizzlies and really mess them up, mm-hmm. because you aren't just playing with an average offensive team. You're actually playing with a good defensive team.
Yeah, I hope that's true, because one of my biggest annoyances with NBA is that if you're LeBron or Kevin Durant and you decide you're going to go dunk the ball, nothing is going to stop
right.
that player.
Nothing.
Literally nothing.
Have you guys seen the videos that came out for NBA Live, and they have they have J.R. Smith shooting the wrong way, but it going in. They have Kevin Love shooting at the wrong basket. The players look nothing like their actual players. Like the courts,
oh, it's great. People are having a field day with
it. Oh, dude. And then I saw this one video where I think it's Kyrie Irving passes it to Love. Love passes it to Mozgov. Mozgov does this move around around Enes Kanter. And just like the abilities that they give these players in NBA Live.
It's like, would he ever be able to do that?
Right. Like, it's not physics. And they should just stop. Just stop making it. And how does the athlete that's on the cover of NBA Live feel?
I mean, I'm sure they're still on.
Is it like being the MVP of the D-League?
I mean, yeah, maybe that's a good comparison. I don't see why not.
Okay.
I gotta be honest, I didn't even know NBA Live was still a thing.
Yeah.
I really
no, they stopped
no
for a
I
while.
I haven't played NBA Live since probably 2002.
They just started making it again 2 years ago, I think.
No.
But it has been trashed online, and I was watching some of the videos. Man, it looks awful.
And also, if our listeners haven't figured out what junk defense is after two explanations, well, she's not going to get it today. It's
we
not your day.
We can't help you.
But thank you, everyone, for listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. We really appreciate you, as always. And please leave that review on iTunes. Again, it's to help us move up the rankings, and we will read them on the show. If you've left one, we've seen it. We will read it. And if you're in a country under that 5 threshold that we were talking about earlier, shoot us a tweet. That way, I know, for example, there's a country that I just found a review that I didn't know we had.
So like Lithuania.
It'll help us out. Yes, Lithuania or one of those countries. If it's one that we might not necessarily
or Madagascar.
Think of right away,
Madagascar,
then
I don't know
we'll that. Read it.
Well, I think reviews in Madagascar count just as much as reviews
anywhere
else.
Every review counts no matter where it is in the world.
I just assume there's no internet in Madagascar.
There are so many things wrong with that statement that I'm not even going to get into now, we'll continue that later.
And if you happen to have an Android device for whatever reason and you're listening on, let's say, Stitcher or TuneIn or the Podbean app, whatever it might be, leave us a review there. Let us know you did it. Shoot us a tweet at @DriveAndDishNBA. We'll make sure to read it on the show. And don't forget to sign up for our Fantasy Basketball League. All you got to do is like the Facebook page at @DriveAndDishNBA and then leave a comment under the top post on our Facebook page.
And you can follow us on Twitter at @DriveAndDishPodcast. Hit us up. We always like to talk some trending basketball news throughout the week. You can follow me personally. I'm at Justin C. on the air. Kevin's at Refuse to Lose. And Tim is at Radio Tim NBA.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole.
Da, 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 da. Hey! Da, 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 da.
Let's go while we're young.
All right, I think they get the point.